Welcome back to Book It, a book podcast, where we read books, we talk about them, and we don't get any free personal pan pizzas for that yet. I'm your host, Sarah Hunt.
And I'm Chrissy Wilson.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. It's a slight delay, but here we are.
Yeah, we had work trips. My grandpa died, and then, you know, so we figured that we would talk more about death this week.
Yeah, let's just get into it.
We're gonna need to like read like four Goosebumps books.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, Sarah, I think like it's been a month.
Yes.
I'm telling you, I drove to record this in a studio and I texted you a picture of it. I didn't finish this fucking book until I pulled into the parking garage to start recording this. And it's been a month.
So you've had such a crazy month, though.
No, but it's not that. I just couldn't finish it. I couldn't do it. I'm just struggling.
Sad. It's so sad. So the book that we read this week, I know that when we last convened, we talked about reading RuPaul's memoirs, but instead we decided to read I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. It is narrated by Jeanette McCurdy, and the audiobook is 6 hours and 26 minutes, and that took Chrissy 1 month.
Yeah, one full month. Listen, I don't have anything negative to say about Jeanette McCurdy. I don't have anything negative to say about the book she wrote. However, this book is so fucking triggering that I couldn't sit through it. It was so hard to read. I applaud her for being able to tell her story. It was just hard to hear. It made me deeply sad, and I could not finish it.
It was a really hard book. So on the bestsellers rank on Amazon, it is number 24 in Audible Books and Originals.
Yay!
Well done. Number 1 in Dysfunctional Families Audible Books and Originals.
I think she went platinum in that. Like, I really... Dysfunctional Family fucking wrote the book on that, literally.
And
here
then
it is.
Also number 1 in Dysfunctional Families parentheses books. So she is Audible book number 1 and then regular book number 1. And number 2 in biographies of celebrities and entertainment professionals. Well done, Jeanette.
Yay.
That is you on the internet.
Listen, I am rooting for her. I want her to succeed in every single thing she does for the rest of her life. I really do.
If that means that she wants to have a breakdown and cry and get drunk and eat like a bunch of Oreos, I think you should.
I think she should do whatever she wants. I think you should do whatever you want. She will never
hear
this.
Paid.
I think Jeanette should do whatever she wants, and I think she should succeed at everything she ever does. I wish that girl nothing but all the best.
She's paid her fucking dues.
Oh my God.
Okay, so I guess we should say if you have any amount of eating disorder triggers or any, like, you know, mom triggers or cancer triggers or anything like that, this episode might be difficult to get through, but you can do it. I believe in you because we're going to try to talk about the horrors. So we will start with the Amazon description, a heartbreaking and hilarious memoir by iCarly and Sam and Cat star Jeanette McCurdy about her struggles as a former child actor, including eating disorders, addiction, and a complicated relationship with her overbearing mother, and how she retook control of her life. Jeanette McCurdy was 6 years old when she had her first acting audition. Her mother's dream was for her only daughter to become a star, and Jeanette would do anything to make her mother happy. So she went along with that, and she went along with what mom called calorie restriction, eating little and weighing herself 5 times a day. She endured extensive at-home makeovers while mom chided, "Your eyelashes are invisible, okay? You think Dakota Fanning doesn't tint hers?" She was even showered by mom until age 16 while sharing her diaries, email, and all of her income. In I'm Glad My Mom Died, Jeanette recounts all of this in unflinching detail, just as she chronicles what happens when the dream finally comes true. Cast in a new Nickelodeon series called iCarly, she is thrust into fame. Though mom is ecstatic, emailing fan club moderators and getting on a first-name basis with the paparazzi, "Hi, Gail," Jeanette is riddled with anxiety, shame, and self-loathing, which manifest into eating disorders, addiction, and a series of unhealthy relationships. These issues only get worse when soon after taking the lead in the iCarly spinoff Sam and Cat alongside Ariana Grande, her mother dies of cancer. Finally, after discovering therapy and quitting acting, Jeanette embarks on a recovery and decides for the first time in her life what she really wants. Told with refreshing candor and dark humor, I'm Glad My Mom Died is an inspiring story of resilience, independence, and the joy of shampooing your own hair.
Oh, God, this poor girl.
That part is fucking sad. The shampooing your own hair is really fucking sad.
God.
Now, the quote that they took out in that description where she says, like, your eyelashes are invisible, okay? You think Dakota Fanning doesn't tint hers? It just depends on the inflection. The way that Jeanette McCurdy says it, it sounds very encouraging and fun. It's, your eyelashes are invisible, okay? Like, it's just like, it's like, what, you know, like, what do you want from me? Yeah, like, it wasn't like mean,
Dakota Fanning
but it
doesn't
sound
too.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think Dakota Fanning doesn't tint hers? Like, she's like, that's supposed to be like, you should feel good about doing this because Dakota Fanning does this. You know what I mean? Like,
she is very, that's very what, deadpan. There's no, there's not like any crazy
emotion.
Yeah. No, I mean,
yeah, she doesn't talk about, like, she'll be like, I was telling this to Chrissy before we started recording. She would have this whole thing and then she'd be like, I kissed him. My vagina felt funny. I'll think about that later. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's very like clinical the way that she reads it.
She's pretty, and she's also fucking hilarious.
Oh, so
because
funny.
There's stuff that happened that, and every single time something crazy happened, she's like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what? I'm gonna need to go beat here. You're Jesus? Got it. Okay, perfect.
Okay, should I call your family?
I don't have their numbers. I'm gonna head out. I will see you. Fuck, God, bye.
She is so earnest with that stuff. Like, when somebody has any problems with her, like, it's so funny because she doesn't seem to be able to get wrapped up in anything. Like, the only thing that she gets wrapped up in is her own mind. You know what I mean? Like, she, if somebody else is doing that, she's not like, yeah, I'll go along with it, you're Jesus. She's like, okay,
I don't
do
listen.
You want me to call somebody? Like,
after reading this girl's this book that this girl wrote, I don't think she's ever hurt anyone or anything.
No.
Other than herself.
Yes. And I think she keeps it that way.
I think she spent the most part of her life trying to please everyone around her.
Absolutely. Mostly her mother. So, Chrissy, I don't know if you found a favorite review, and I don't think that there is such thing as a favorite review for this book.
I did. I found two that I enjoyed.
Yeah, so I have highlighted
some
people. I have highlighted two people with whom I think need to reevaluate some things in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I really worry about them. So I think yours are probably more entertaining than mine. So I'll just read mine so that I can be pissy with them, and then we can. Okay, Katya, 1 star, the worst book I have read in the last decade. This is on December 21st, 2022. I am of the age that I grew up watching Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel. I liked iCarly. I guess the reviews and the lists that this book made set my expectations far too high. This book and McCurdy truly disappointed me. I understand her resentment towards her mother and other people, but she truly made a big deal out of minuscule things. All of this felt like a slap in the face to those who have overcome so much more. She has not experienced much of real life, and it is demonstrated in this book. Her biggest problem in her whole portrayal of herself is that she has the worst entitled attitude of anyone I've ever read or personally dealt with. I wanted so badly to sympathize with her, but she made me dislike her, and I frankly did not care anymore after the first half of the book. I finished the book, and it got more disappointing and poorly written. She has done herself a major disservice, and she should really be more grateful. She complains so much, it's unbelievable.
Fuck off, first of all. Change your name. Change your name right now. The only one permitted to use the name Katya is the
Katarina
queen.
Is Petrovna. Zamilochikova. But
queen
your dad
Katya. Get the fuck
just calls her Katya. Yeah.
If you cannot put justice on the name, fucking change it. You're now Barb, bitch. Change your name to Barb. If you want to have that attitude, come in here with real Barb energy.
Oh, this is no, this is Brenda energy, if I've ever heard it before in my life. Okay, and then the second one that I have is Prolificus. Doesn't even deserve one star. This has to be the worst book I have ever, ever read. What a waste of my time. And I'm equally angry that this actually made the New York Times bestseller list. WTF. This story could have been told in a 30-minute segment on The Oprah Show and been done. No need to go on for 91 torturous chapters of how sick her home life was with her mentally ill mother and sharing it with the world. Share it with a therapist. Bottom line, McCurdy is a poor writer and her life story is not worthy of a 91-chapter book. I will be permanently deleting this book from my Kindle library.
Well, you already paid for it, bitch, so she already got your money.
We already got your money.
I cashed that check.
All right, Chrissy, hit me with your entertaining reviews. God damn it, because I fucking hate those people. I'm not even going to dignify you with a comment because you know what you did.
I don't even need to read the review of this, but somebody said, Steph, 5 stars, a great read, especially if you too hated your mother. So if you hate your mother, go ahead and read it. 5 stars.
And then, love that.
My 1-star reviews are, I'm just going to read the one, which is genuinely my fucking favorite of people who don't understand what reviews are for and the context of which you should be reviewing. 1 star. I like it. I relate to the story. While the book is great, I haven't put it down since I've gotten it. However, the quality of the book itself is horrible. The pages came upside down in the hardcover on top of the book. Cover itself is flimsy. I just ended up removing it from my book altogether. Bitch, you are not this is not a review of the printer. It's not. Yeah. We're not reviewing the print. You are reviewing the book itself. I don't think people understand what we are reviewing when it comes to it. The other 1-star review is the same thing. We order a new one and receive a used one. Not ordered. We order. We order a new one and receive a used one. We receive a used book and pay for a new one. Okay, that's fine. What did Jeanette have to do with that, okay? She didn't do shit. Your problem is with Amazon.
Jeanette.
Go complain.
Jeanette sent her the used book.
Yeah,
she
Jeanette
was like, give them a used one. Yeah, give them a used one.
Yeah, fuck that.
So this book, it is 91 chapters.
The chapters are so tiny. That's not,
they're so tiny.
Come on.
But and she talks really fast, which I enjoyed a great deal. I liked that she talked really fast. And again, it's really quick. Like she'll go, one, I ate breakfast, blah, 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 blah. Two. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so they're like really small chapters. And so that's good.
I told you that there's 91 chapters and I didn't start taking any notes until chapter 22 because I was so fucking like just dumbfounded by the shit I was hearing. I was like, I'm sorry.
Oh,
what?
It was disturbing. Yeah, it was so disturbing. I
couldn't. I just physically couldn't. This book was beyond triggering. Horrifying.
Yeah. So, okay. So the book begins and we're in the hospital with Jeanette and her family. Okay. So she's there with her dad, her 3 older brothers, Dustin, Scott, and Marcus, and her grandparents, and her mom, who's dying, obviously. And it's everybody trying to get mom out of a coma, okay? So we kind of see that mom is kind of, she's made it so that everybody has to cater to her emotions, so everybody's trying really hard. I mean, you would do this anyway in the hospital, but everybody's trying really hard to get her out of her coma. So they're like, oh, so-and-so and I are getting married. Oh, we're moving back to California. Like, you know, they're doing, like, all the kids are doing that. And then Jeanette waits until she's alone with her mom. And she's like, Mom, I'm finally down to 89 pounds. Like, because she thought that that's a fucking big one. And mom's going to wake up out of a coma because I finally hit 89 pounds at fucking 18 years old or whatever. Horrible.
And that part is in the book twice. And I think that coma she does come out of. So that coma, she does come out.
Yeah, and then she dies soon after that.
And then she, but I don't, so, and I don't remember if it's that coma or the one that was before it, where she did wake up, and the first thing she said to Jeanette was that her, your brothers told me you went to Burger King and got a Whopper. I can't believe you ate that. Like, bitch, you just died and came back to life. Can you leave me alone? Leave me alone.
Why don't you eat a Whopper? Because then maybe you might be able to fight off some of this cancer.
God.
Yeah.
You're stressing me out, lady. You are dying. I'm not thriving right now. I ate a sandwich. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a Whopper. I didn't get mayonnaise on it, which, you know, that's good. But I ate the burger.
Yeah. So instead she's looking at her dying mother, telling her how skinny she is to try and bring her back to life because.
Yeah. This is the one where she died shortly after, because I think the Burger King one was the one right before this.
Right before it, yeah.
So Jeanette was born on June 26th, 1992. They live in Garden Grove, California, when she's growing up, or as they call it, Garbage Grove, which I kind of love that. not that I know anything about Garden Grove. It's just like I think it's fun when people have like a fun little moniker or, you know, something like that for their hometown, because I'm not sure of it and it makes me feel like I'm in on it. So it's fun. But she lived in a house with her mom, Deb, her dad, Mark, her three brothers, Dustin, Scott, and Marcus, and her grandparents, who are Deb's parents. And this is Mark's family's house, and they get like basically a deal on the rent because of it. They're like renting this house from the family.
I don't know, Sarah. This feels like a real Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory situation happening here.
This is a bucket family, if I've ever heard one.
The sleeping arrangements, like it's all just very fucked.
The trifold fucking mats on the floor instead of beds. Like, let's have beds.
Oh, the Costco mats?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucked.
So, so Jeanette she's been acting since the year 2000. I think she was 8.
To make her mom happy.
Yes, to make her mom happy. Because her mom never got to be an actor because grandma and grandpa wouldn't let her act. And so she's like, I'm going to let you do everything that you want to do. But it's everything that I wanted to do.
Deb also seems to hate her own mother. And
oh, for sure. Yeah, I definitely want to know a lot about that dynamic.
Jeanette's encounter with her maternal grandma also seemed negative. So, I don't know. There's a whole lot of wonky energy.
There's no way to have a positive interaction with grandma. None.
No.
She will forbid it. Like, even if you're like, hi, grandma, you look beautiful. She'd be like, you don't call me that much. Like, she is like fucking Liz Taylor. Like, wow. Wow. Like, girl, you're like Virginia Woolf right now. Like, what is happening with you? Like, grandma is nuts. I'd be like, and she's like, grandma, like the fact that at the end of the book, Jeanette was like, grandma, I've talked about this with you. If you're going to keep doing this, I'm going to hang up and block you. And I was like, what a hilarious thing to say to your grandma.
You've ruined my grocery trip and I will be blocking you. And
yeah,
you can take that shit elsewhere. She just fucking did it.
I loved it. I love that.
I loved the energy. Genuinely.
Deb is like highly, highly, highly codependent. And I don't know if she's always been this way, but like when Jeanette was young, her mom was diagnosed with cancer. I think she was like 2. And one of the things that Deb did was she loves to watch the home videos from when she had cancer. And she also loves to make Jeanette feel like shit because in a nice way. Like, she's like, you wouldn't stop singing Jingle Bells. Like, I'm 2. I don't understand the gravity of the situation. I don't know what cancer means. I don't know what chemo is. Like, I don't know.
Jingle Bells. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. So I'm going to say Jingle Bells. Like, fuck you.
I have no idea what's happening. Let me just be 2. No, but instead I'm going to take these videos and play them every fucking day. And if you don't watch them, I'm going to drag you.
Why would all the kids want to relive our mom bald and going through chemotherapy? Like, she's like, okay, come on, guys. We're going to watch the video. No, I don't want to watch this video. This sounds awful. No, thank you.
Oh, God.
But anyway, so also after her cancer diagnosis, it looks like she became a bit of a hoarder, Deb. So she really likes to hoard onto things.
This is a whole family problem, okay? Like, there are 3 children in this household, and those are the 3 that I'm not blaming, all right? But other than that, there are 4.
No, 4. There's 4 children.
So she has 3 brothers.
Yeah, 3 brothers.
So 4 children and 4 adults.
Yeah.
The 4 adults not helping the situation at all.
No. And so the grandma is a receptionist at like a funeral home? Retirement home?
I don't know. Again, I told you I was too triggered. I didn't take notes during any of this part.
She was a front desk person at something. The grandpa was a ticket taker at Disneyland.
Oh, which is lovely.
And
there's the part in there that's really sweet that like he's like, hey, I got something for you. And he pulls out the little Mike Wazowski for her that he got from work.
Oh, I love that.
That part kind of broke my heart because he pulls it. She's like, he came up to me and he was like, I hate that you're doing this and you're just.
Yeah, kids are
supposed to be kids. I got you this. And he gave her a little toy, a little Mike Wazowski toy. And it just made me so sad. I think I cried like 95 times in this book, which is why it took me a fucking month to read it. It just made me so sad.
It was tough. Yeah. So, okay. So then the dad makes cardboard cutout things at Hollywood Video. That's a fucking cool job.
That is a fucking cool job. And then
does like kitchen. He does like kitchen design stuff at Home Depot or something.
He comes home and Deb tries to fist fight him at least once a week.
Deb is so like the home life is so volatile. And
oh
like
my God.
Jeanette really only talks mostly about like basically her mom is like Pat Ramsey. JonBenet Ramsey's mom, except for she's like nicer. She's like nice Pat Ramsey. Cause she's like, oh, baby, you're gonna be my baby's the like she like they're Mormon, but she's like, oh, my daughter is a homeless. Like she's homeless, she's amazing. Like she's like she's if Jeanette McCurdy books a role, like she's gonna be the best at it. Like her mom's at least like nice about this stuff.
Yeah.
But Jeanette doesn't want to do it at all. But like her mom's like, oh, you're doing so good at this. Like she's not like, you know,
she's
like she's
not
mad at her.
Because at some point, I don't remember at what point it is Jeanette's. I don't know what when she writes her first screenplay, and
she
brings it to the mom, and the mom is like, hope you're not planning on becoming a writer. They all dress frumpy and get fat.
Yes, she's definitely ugly
like
about
being
a lot of things.
A writer. I like
writing things.
I actually prefer to be a writer.
I should say. I will amend what I said, that she is really supportive about acting.
It's because like, she wants to do it. She is supportive of wanting to live vicariously through her child.
She even, like, she does, like, big smile. Like, you know, like, make it toothy. Like, she gives the face that she wants Jeanette to make. And then Jeanette, like, mirrors it and makes it and all this stuff. Like, so she's just really programmed this kid. At the beginning of the book, too, Jeanette says, like, you know, my mom's going to die. And then she's like, I don't know who I am without my mom. Like, I don't know what I do. Like, she's like, I don't know who I am.
She spent the entire first part of her life just completely trying to please this woman.
And if the mom is mad at the dad, like, she'll be like, hi, mommy. Like, and she'll, like, want to make her happy so that she doesn't yell so much at her dad. Like, she's such a sweet girl, Jeanette. Like, that. It's just like, oh, I felt so sad for her. But Deb loves to bring up that she had cancer. Loves to bring
to
it
everyone,
up.
To
anybody
literally everyone.
Who will listen. And she makes everybody rewatch the home movie of her, you know, doing all that stuff. She is a liar, like by like a lot. She's super manipulative. She's really controlling. She's absolutely psychotic. And then we find out that Jeanette's dad, Mark, is not actually her real dad.
Oh,
this is
the way
she finds out. Yeah, that's fucked up.
This is delivered to her was genuinely fucking wild.
Horrifying.
So the beginning of the book, there's which is a little, you know, a little treat that Jeanette drops in there. She drops this whole entire story of her mom talking about how she's going to see her high school friend. And she's like, but she's not my best friend. She's not my best friend, Nettie. You are my best friend. You are my, you little six-year-old are my best friend.
That's disgusting.
She's going to see her friend from high school who Jeanette's like, I can't figure out if she likes her or she hates her. And the mom's going into this whole story about how she stole her baby name and how she sucks.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the book, when Deb dies, the dad starts dating that woman who stole the baby name.
Basically, like, at the funeral, was like, I gotta get Karen's phone number.
Hey, hey.
He's like, oh, good. Karen showed up.
Hey,
awesome.
Oh,
I got to. Excuse me. Kids, I'll be right back.
And then she's like, I made him tell you that he's not your biological father. And she's
as
like,
soon
what?
As he told me.
The
yeah.
Fuck?
Like, fuck you. Who are you?
What do you mean? What?
Yeah. So she finds out that her dad. So after her mom dies, she finds out that her dad is not her real dad. He tells her, he's like, oh, hey, kid, I have to tell. And she's like, oh, okay, so he's going to marry this woman now? No, completely left turn, U-turn four times in a row, like on two wheels. He's like, actually, no, I'm not your real dad. And I was like, you know what, though? Like, way to go.
Yeah.
Raising those kids and taking, but like, wait. So did Deb cheat on Mark with this man, or was there a relationship?
I don't understand. I mean, I don't think she went that deep into it. Cause I don't know if the time that she wrote this, that she knew, but it seemed like it was an ongoing relationship that she had at the same time, because no one knew any different than Mark. Jeanette was the youngest, right? Her brothers were all older than her.
And yeah.
Were all the brothers, or two of the three? This guy's?
I don't remember now.
I don't know. It's Jeanette and at least two of her brothers.
I think it's Marcus and Scott?
Yeah, I think two of her brothers are there. You know, she has, she start, as soon as she said that he told me he's not my biological father, she stopped calling him dad in the book and started calling him Mark.
Mark dad.
She went Mark dad, and then there's Andrew dad. And Andrew dad is like a jazz trombone man. She did meet, and she asked him, she's like, did you know about me? And he said yes. But I think the heartbreaking part for me is that, like, you have Jeanette and you have this little tiny girl who's 7 years old and sees Mark dad as her actual dad, and she's writing in there how, like, it felt like he had no interest in her and didn't give a shit about her, and
she couldn't connect with him.
Everything she did, she tried. One time he gave her a birthday card and spelled her name wrong on it, and she didn't care. She was so excited that he gave her a birthday card, and then somehow found out that Deb's like, well, I told him to do that. And there was like that one instance that I'm like, oh God, why would you tell that kid that? And then there was that second instance that he took her to like a dance practice, like a dance recital or dance, I think it was practice, rehearsal. And he was like, let's ride bikes. So they rode bikes, and then they rode bikes back, and he like stopped to get smoothies, and she's like, we can't afford these. And he's like, well, it's whatever, who cares? Have it.
Yeah, he's like, we got payday, yeah.
And it was like the best day of her life, and they got home, and Deb flipped out because him riding bikes now made her late for her acting class and a whole thing.
And she would, like, come up to her dad with a knife, make him sleep in the car all the time. Like, what the fuck? This guy, like, put up with so much from Deb.
It was crazy. Which is probably why the second she died, he was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fuck that lady that stole your baby name.
Yeah. What's up, Karen? We finally got rid of Deb.
God.
No, but, like, so she finds out that that's not her real dad. And it was so strange how he brought it up.
Yeah, well, she thought she was being brought to a lunch to be told that he was marrying Karen. So she's like, all right, what do you got? And he's like, well, I'm not your biological father. And she's like, I'm sorry, what? I'm going to need you to take it back a second. Walk this back real quick.
I think we love Karen, Dad. And he's like, oh, because I'm not your dad. And okay. But no, and then I just remembered that in the beginning, when Jeanette says that, like, her mom would always say to her, like, you know, I could have had anybody. If your dad actually had a job that paid good money, like, I wouldn't have to rely on my kid. And then she's also like, oh, I could have had anybody. And, like, I went out with movie producers and music producers and blah, blah, blah. Like, so she was telling Jeanette about her real dad right there.
Yeah, except never
I could have had anybody.
Told her.
Yeah, fucked up. And not even like when she turned 18, because I get it. I get it. You tell them when they can understand it, or if the dad wants to have a relationship with them or something like that. But like,
the Andrew dad tells her that there was a custody battle for the kids and that the mom told the courts that he was abusive, which wasn't true. And she won and he was like pushed aside to be, and the kids were to be raised by Mark. But she's like, so I ambushed him, and he said, "It's I'm glad you're I'm happy you're here. I'm nice to meet. It's great to meet you." But I don't know if he meant it, because that's just what you say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, and that's, you know, and of course, again, she's not giving us any inflection. She's like, "I met him, and this is what he said."
She was super nervous, and
yeah,
that's it.
And so Jeanette and her three brothers were homeschooled, and their mom was a hoarder, and they had beds, but there was so much shit in every room that all of the kids slept on, like, these trifold, like,
Costco mats.
It's definitely some Willy Wonka energy, except for their house seems like the bucket house seems cleaner.
Yeah, this house seems, I mean, horrific. Jeanette herself was, like, humiliated by it and embarrassed, which the whole thing is just so, I don't know. It's so sad that, like, she would try and get everyone out of the house to go to church.
She liked going to church because it was somewhere away from the house.
Yeah. She's wanted to get out of there all the time. I mean, even when she started acting, her mom was like, "I'm going to give you all your money," which she didn't. Like, that, I'm sure whatever percentage got put into a Coogan account for, which, if you don't know, Coogan accounts, child actors, there was a law that passed at some point, probably in the 90s, that 10% of child actor earnings are supposed to go directly into what's called a Coogan account, where when the kids turn 18, they can access that. But the 90%, the parents, it's at their parents' discretion. So everything's living off of Jeanette. But her first paycheck, she wanted to buy herself a bunk bed and was like, I just want somewhere to just fucking sleep.
Yeah, I would like a bunk bed. But then also, like, it's so funny how she says, like, "Oh, that's your money. That's your, like, you know, da da da." But then, like, later on, Deb gets mad at her for going to Hawaii with that 30-year-old man. And then she's like, "You're a whore and I disown you and send fridge money."
And she's saying,
I could not fucking believe that you said that, Miss Deborah.
She doubles down on it. So Jeanette, as like a wrap gift for, I think, Sam and Kat.
It was for one of the shows they got to go to Hawaii.
They got a trip to Hawaii. Now, I thought it was
the cast member plus one.
But I thought it was like a whole group trip. I don't think it was. I think it was just like you go by yourself and take somebody with you. So she took the guy who she was dating at the time, who, honestly, this girl was preyed upon by everybody. This was like, she was 18 years old and he was like 32 and a total.
That they all went to Hawaii and they probably had like a meetup and they probably had like a dinner or something like that. But for the most part, it was like, "Here, go to Hawaii, enjoy yourself. You have to show up to these events."
There was a paparazzi on the beach during this and they were on paddleboards, on separate paddleboards. I look up the photos too, by the way. She's wearing like a bikini top and board shorts. And there's one photo of her that she had her hand on his stomach. So, like, not anything crazy. She's, you know, at the beach, whatever. There's nothing crazy. And she looks great.
Fine.
Like, she looks totally great in all these photos. But it led to her having, like, a complete and total, like, panic attack and breakdown, because that shit all gets published and she immediately sees it and thinks the worst in herself and realizes that Deborah's gonna, like, lose her shit on her. And she fucking did. The boyfriend did that.
Yeah.
So not only did Deb email her and was like, "You're a whore, you fat whore, send fridge money," she also went onto a fan board or whatever.
Yes.
And posted about what a piece of shit Jeanette was. Like, and then she's like, "I think she's bluffing." And she went and looked at it and she's like, "Nope, there it is. There's my mom in a chat group with my fans talking about how
unbelievable.
What a little piece of shit I am because I touched a man's stomach in Hawaii." And then she's like,
"Yeah, that was truly psychotic.
Can we please talk about this?" And she's like, "Yeah, we can meet up. Send fridge money."
Yeah, and she says it like twice. Yeah. But okay, so the funny thing is, and I felt so bad for Jeanette because I really think that her brothers failed her. And of course, she doesn't like talk about this that much, but I think that maybe it happened to some degree, but I just feel like none of them were like, "Hey, that's weird. Like, mom doesn't do that with us." Like,
but she did. So, like,
that's true.
I think that the adults failed her. I mean, you can't really blame the kids because they're all children, whatever. But there's four adults in this household, and you have a girl who was getting breast and vaginal exams by her mom and being showered by her mom until 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah,
and
she's being abused.
She would force the kids for her to shower them. And when Jeanette was like 14, was forcing her to be showered with her brother, with her one brother who was 16. That I'm like, that is horrifying to me.
Horrifying. No, horrifying. But like, okay. So what I'm trying to say with that is that like, it doesn't seem like they were that close with her to where they could be like, you know, like she didn't, because they never had to listen to anything that the mom said. If she was doing something and like popping off and like the boys are just playing 007, they're just playing GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why aren't they afraid of their mom? Like, why are you so afraid and they're not? Like,
I don't know.
Probably, what's going on?
Men, and she was like a 5'2",
89-pound
lady that they're like, I'm not scared of this lady.
4'11".
Oh, God. Yeah,
she was very small.
And like, I can blow her over with a leaf.
The grandpa seemed to be a little like, this is crazy. But everybody else is so complicit in that house. The kids obviously don't know any different. The boys don't know any different. But I think I would be like, how come you're not like this with them? Like, and I'd be mad at my brothers. I'd be like, why aren't you guys fucking helping me out here? Like, and what the fuck? Mom's fucking flipping out.
She did have adults that tried to intervene at some point, but it was like, you know, from what she saw, it was one-time things, and it was never anything that stuck, and it was never anything that actually helped her. Like, she had the one doctor when she had to be, like, 12 years old when her mom put her, when she started to get boobs, and her mom, she's like...
Yeah, she said she was 11.
She was terrified of growing up because she thought her mom wouldn't love her anymore because she was booking more roles because she looked like a little kid. So she started to get boobs, and she's like, well, what do I do to get rid of these, mom? Because I don't want to grow up. I just want to be your little kid forever. And she's like, well, there's something you can do. It's calorie restriction. And she's 11. And then she's wearing a size 7 slim in kids. And she goes to the doctor. And the doctor pulls the mom out and is like, excuse me.
What the fuck is going on? Yeah. Why is she 61 pounds? And that's the other thing is that she's in a booster seat in the car until she's like 14 because she doesn't weigh enough.
It's crazy.
And it's like, why doesn't she weigh enough?
So you've got this, like, even like at that, like, you've got, she's like, you have a woman who's driving her Chevy Astro van or Chevy Windstar or whatever.
Ford Windstar.
And this 9-year-old girl in a booster seat in the back. And the mom is like, you're my best friend. And also you pay all of my bills. Like, crazy.
You know what, Chrissy? I'm actually kind of happy that she got pushed into acting because at least she met some normal people. Can you imagine if she never went into that? She would have never met anybody normal. She would have just thought that was normal, and she would have just been going through this forever.
I don't know, though,
she's on the other side of it.
If she never got shoved into acting and she just got to be a normal kid,
But she wouldn't have been a normal kid.
I don't know that her trauma would have been as extensive.
She would have been some weird fucking eating disorder kid. And not that those people are weird. I'm just saying that she would be like a weird, obsessed with her mom, kid with an eating disorder, and she would just complete the cycle and keep the cycle going with her kids and her family and stuff when she has one. You know what I mean? Because that's what she's used to. Her grandma is fucking insane. She's calling and saying like, you don't love me, you don't call me, you don't do anything. And I tell all my friends that you're ungrateful and blah blah blah. And it's like, hey, I get it that your daughter's dead, but don't call me with this.
Tell whoever you want that. I've blocked you. You will not be telling me. You can tell
that to the space. I don't know.
Whatever,
like,
you need to
fuck
do.
Off. Shut up.
Whatever,
but yeah, like
do.
It just. It feels like that's obviously what grandma used to do to Deb, is that she used to terrorize Deb, and then now Deb's dead. And so she doesn't have anybody to take that out on. And so now she's like, oh, next down the line is Jeanette. And it's
nope. Abuse this already abused person.
Yeah. But the funny thing is that I love how Jeanette's like, no.
I only
have capacity for one bully. No, thank you.
We are at limit. I'm going to send you out of here. I'm blocked.
Yeah. Grandma, I am at capacity right now. Okay. I can't handle it anymore. All right.
God.
Chugged a bunch of tequila earlier. Not doing great. I'm at Whole Foods right now looking at black bean burger patties. I can't talk to you right now. I can't. Okay.
God.
So Deb's an asshole. I want to know more about the mom and the grandma dynamics. We can go into her career a little bit because, so she starts out on like Mad TV at 8 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. She's like acting in something funny. And I will say this, Jeanette McCurdy is very funny.
Like, reading this book and understanding how she kind of came up, I do realize that a lot of celebrity memoirs have a strong hand of ghostwriting in them. I did not look at the credits on this, but I truly do believe that a majority... She might have had some support in editing, but I think that this was completely told in her own voice, in her own words.
Yes.
And her writing was incredibly prevalent in this book.
Yes.
So I do think she's incredibly talented, and her delivery of this was great. I was too old. The Nickelodeon era for me, I'm the same exact age as Amanda Bynes. So like the Nickelodeon era for me is the Amanda Bynes era. So at this point.
Yeah, I was an all that girly.
Like when she was coming up, when she was booking things when she was 14, I don't know if I'm 8 years older than her or 6 years older than her. If she's booking stuff at 14, I'm 20. I'm not watching Nickelodeon.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not watching iCarly. I think I watched some iCarly with some of the kids that I babysat. So because I used to like babysit and nanny and stuff when I was younger, so I probably accidentally watched some. Like, and I don't remember it being horribly offensive. I just wasn't. No. I wasn't the audience for it.
Like Nickelodeon to me was like Salute Your Shorts.
Yep. Are you afraid of the dark?
Are you afraid of the dark?
Ooh. Pete Let's
and
have a little palette.
Hey, dude.
Ooh, I love Pete and Pete. What was your traumatizing thing from Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh, we talked about this.
Yeah.
I honestly can't even remember what the fucking episode is. Now, mind you, these are all on Paramount Plus, so I may go rewatch them. I did rewatch one episode, there's one episode that I live for, and it's my favorite thing in the entire world. It was an episode that was Melissa Joan Hart when she is like 12 or 13 years old, and her and the kids she babysits get dropped off at the kid's great-great aunt's house somewhere, and there's like a kid that was murdered in the woods or something, and he's like a ghost, and he's standing outside, and he's like, I'm cold.
Yes.
And they have to like go find his red sweater. I don't know. So like, and then they give him the sweater, and he's like, thank you, and disappears. So like, the ants are very much like giving off the energy of like the ants in Practical Magic. Like they are some witchy bitches. Okay. So they're living by themselves. But the one that triggered me was there's one where there's like a monster that comes out of a swimming pool.
Oh.
And I don't remember. I think it's like a school swimming pool at night. And it's like a creepy thing that comes out. And that was like the one that I'm like, no, we're fucking done here. What? I don't know what you are.
That's a wrap on that. I'm not watching this shit anymore.
I'm not watching this ever again. And then I would watch it again. What was yours?
Yeah. Mine was that one with the jester and the blue shit that came out of his mouth in the microwave. So, like, the microwave, it would, like, spin, and then it would go off, and then you would open the microwave, and then smoke would come out, and then here comes that jester with his stupid fucking laugh, and he had the blue shit coming out of his mouth.
God.
I hate that guy.
The show was so fucking great.
It was so scary. Why were we watching that?
Do you remember the game shows? Did you watch the game shows, too? Obviously, like, Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple.
So you had like the game shows. You had like Legends of the Hidden Temple, Guts, and then you had like all the Mark Summer shit, like Double Dare.
Yeah.
There was a game called What Would You Do? That like a game show that like I fucking lived for. What Would You Do? Also a great show. That was the Nickelodeon that I was. Melissa, listen. There was obviously we're doing this because our minds were refreshed by. The Quiet on Set docuseries release. And I will say that I think Melissa Joan Hart's statement on that was a misstep. She should have absolutely stepped away from saying anything.
Just don't say anything. It's so easy.
However, I will say that most of my Nickelodeon experience, the shows that I watched were all... A lot of the shows that I watched were kind of pre-Dan Schneider. So, like, I didn't watch a lot of shows that were produced by Dan Schneider because he produced a lot of the shows that were when I had aged out.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that because I really only watched all that. I really loved Kenan and Kel.
Uh-huh.
And I really loved Lori Beth
Denberg. Oh, yeah.
I loved her so much. I think I was a little old for Amanda. And also, like, I was kind of the hyper rooster, like, funny kid. So I was like, bitch. Like, but even though we're not in competition, but I'm like, I've got this covered.
Yeah.
I think Amanda Bynes is very funny, and I really, really love her. And I will, every single video, ask Chrissy, I send it to her, and I'm like, oh, I just love her. I hope she's doing okay.
I root for her, too. Listen.
Yeah. I'm like, I hope Amanda's okay.
She seems super sweet. But again, even with, like, Amanda Bynes, again, like I said, we're the same exact age. So we're the same exact age. You tend to, as a kid, you tend to watch things where people are just a little bit older than you. Versus watching things with people the same age. So even at that point, I think I was watching other things and not.
Maybe that's what my problem was.
In the salute your shorts, where you're eight and you're looking at these 14-year-old kids like they're fucking icons.
They're fucking gods. Yeah, they're gods. So anyway, back to Jeanette. She is at eight. She starts on Mad TV. She appears in several television series. She's in CSI, obviously. Malcolm in the Middle, Lincoln Heights, Will and Grace, Zoe 101, True Jackson, VP, Law and Order, SVU, Medium, Judging Amy, The Inside, Karen Sisko, Over There, Close to Home, Hollywood Homicide, and she's also in in Strong Medicine, and she's in a commercial for Sprint. In 2007, she is cast as Sam Puckett in iCarly, and then that's kind of who she is for the duration.
I love, like, so all of her pre iCarly work, where, like, the one, like, big break she had, where she went from being a background, like, extra
a featured extra.
A featured extra was because she looked the most depressed.
Her mom was yelling at her she's like, stop looking so sad. And then they cast her for a spot, and then she got, like, bumped up in the Kid Actor Society because they're like, she's just got a great sad face.
Yeah,
and she's like, yeah, my baby's so sad.
Bummed. This kid looks like she hates this. Like,
she hates her life. Get her in here. Yeah. Get her in here. Get her on, and cut. Wow. She doesn't even break character ever. And then so she's 16 in 2008, and she's Sam Puckett on iCarly. And she's, like, best friends with Miranda Cosgrove, which I love this for her.
First of all, and
I also love Colton.
Yeah. I didn't know. I didn't watch a lot of this, so I don't know. I know the name Miranda Cosgrove. I didn't know a lot about her. But how Jeanette introduces her in this book as, like, her being, like, in Arclight Cinema gift card giving, T-Mobile sidekick using, drinking out of a Coke bottle, taking herself to restaurants and not believing in God. I'm like, this bitch is fucking incredible. I love this girl.
Miranda Cosgrove.
I'm rooting for you too, Miranda. I hope you succeed in everything. Like, you are my kind of girl.
That's my kind of gal. Love her so much. So she gives them, like, she gives Jeanette, like, a gift. You know, Jeanette just gets a whole bunch of baskets and stuff like that. And she gives Jeanette a gift for, like, hey, welcome to the show, like, that type of thing. And it's, like, an Arclight movie theater gift card. And it was $100. And Jeanette was like, oh, my God.
This is so fancy.
So her mom goes to get Miranda, like, a reciprocal gift. And it's, like, a cute little, like, you know, a TY.
Animal,
like, it's like a Beanie Baby thing. And,
like a
little
diary.
Fuzzy journal. And, I mean, yeah, like, it's pretty lame. But Deb doesn't know how to get people gifts. Like, she's like, this is cute, right? And Jeanette is, like, horrified to give this to Miranda. She's like, you gave me $100 to the movies. Oh, I gave you this stuffed animal. But, like, Miranda was so sweet about it. She was like, thanks for the stuffed animal. It's cute. And by the way, Jeanette McCurdy's impression of Miranda Cosgrove is spot fucking on. I was like, oh, did they get Miranda to come in and read her lines? Like,
oh,
I love the stuffed animal. It's cute. I loved it so much. But
I think
Miranda Cosgrove is adorable, and we love her. So then she's like, do you have AIM? And Jeanette's like, no.
No, what is that?
And I love how Jeanette has instinct enough to try to wait for context clues if she doesn't know what something is, because she's very sheltered.
Yeah.
So she'll be like, no. And they're like, AOL Instant Messenger. And she's like, oh
yeah.
I don't know what you were thinking. I'm sorry. Yeah, I totally have that.
Obviously.
And
I
then
have that.
She'll, like, fudge her way through that conversation. And then she'll go up to her brother and be like, you need to get me AOL Instant Messenger right now. I want a friend. Like, it was like,
figure this out. You've done nothing for me to this point.
Marcus, let's go. Instant Messenger. Make me a cute username.
Wait until you find out who your dad is. Get me on AIM.
Yeah, and guess what? I'm going to be able to one that meets him, because who am I? I'm Sam Puckett on iCarly, so I can do whatever the fuck I want. So she is like, she's on iCarly. And then I think at some point, does she do, yeah, this is when she does the tour, right? Where she goes mall tour.
The mall tour is part of her music career. So she's on iCarly, and then by the way, I made a note of this one where she's on iCarly. This is another one where I'm going to fucking snap. This is probably on account of her nutrition level, where she's 16 and she just got her period set. And then her mom proceeds to tell everyone on fucking set. And then the tutor, that got brought in, is like, congratulations on becoming a woman. Fuck you. Fuck you, lady.
This is a bad day.
You're educating me and you're congratulating me. This is not, we're not talking about this. I'm on the toilet.
That's another thing that she said about your period. And the one girl member, this is how Jeanette waits for context clues for something. So her friend goes have you gotten your period? Do you have your period? And she's like, yeah. And because she thinks that she's talking about a class period, at school. And she's like, yeah, no, totally, I have one of those. Well, first she thinks she's talking about a time period. And then she's like, no, your period. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah. I have seven.
Totally have that. I have seven of those.
Yeah, there's at least seven. How many do you have?
How many have you had? A lot?
A lot.
Cool.
Yeah, I've got seven.
I'll talk to you later on. I have AIM. But so she gets her period, and her mom just goes and tells everybody that that's why she's running late.
Yeah,
and that's so embarrassing. And I thought of something that I have that's a blood story, but not period. Okay, so when I was a little kid, when we moved to Arizona, I used to get bloody noses all the time. And I would wake up every day and my pillow would just have blood all over it. And we went to Karchner Caverns in Tucson, and I had this bloody nose. It was because it's so dry out there, and it was awful. But I had this bloody nose, and they would not let me go into the caverns with my bloody nose. And I couldn't get my nose to stop bleeding. They almost called an ambulance on me for my nose. And it wasn't even it was that bad. I'm like, no, I'm cool. I'll just hold the tissue up. I don't care. But they would not let me go in the caverns with my bloody nose. And then so finally I got my nose to stop bleeding, and we got to go, and I got to turn the lights on and off for the tour.
That's pretty badass.
I was like, boom. But it was so embarrassing because everyone's just I'm like, it's just a bloody nose. I get these all the time, and they're like, we have to call an ambulance. I'm like, you absolutely do not have to do that.
It is not that serious.
Please do not do that. That'll be so embarrassing. Oh my God. Do not do that.
It's
that was
fine. It's just dry.
So that was embarrassing. So I can't even imagine being at work and having everybody go, no. I'd be like, get away from me.
I mean, just fucking horrifying. But that after was horrifying. That was the writer's strike. So when there was the writer's strike in 2007, 2008, the writer's strike, when was that? I don't know. During that, she went and signed with Capitol Records because they're like, what the fuck else are we going to do? I'll become a country star. And so she went.
Yeah, her mom wants her to become a country star.
She went and signed with Capitol Records, and then they're like, you need to do a mall tour. And she was like, great. This sounds like
because
so
she couldn't
fun.
Go. She couldn't go and audition for. So she said that basically, normally, what they do when they go on a radio tour or something, they go to the radio station and they audition for the people, at the radio station. So she's in a booth, and then there's maybe two or three people in the recording part, and they'll tell her whether or not they'll play her song on the radio. But what she has to do, since she's Sam Puckett, is she has to go and show her ass at fucking malls and sell tickets and bring people there and have her audition at a mall where a bunch of people. So she's like, well, hopefully I'm good. Hopefully I'm good enough for this.
She was also working 18 hours a day. Okay.
But that was crazy.
She like, I mean, she's like, I would wake up, I would do press, I would go to the mall tour, I would spend 20 minutes eating, I would go do an autograph signing where people would walk up and be like, fried chicken, and then scream at me and then walk away. And then I would go back and rehearse.
Yeah, where's your butter sock?
Yeah. And it was like, I mean, she had no time. And so at that point, her mom, her cancer was coming back, so she was not on this mall tour with her.
No, she was not. She had like a tumor or something, right?
She had brain tumors, and I don't know, things had started to reemerge, and she was going back into treatment.
Yeah, and she was going to go to treatment.
Jeanette is on this tour by herself for the first time, staying at like fucking Hampton Inns, going around during this mall tour, working 18 hours a day, and she's like, best time of my life. Like, it was the first time I was free. I washed my own hair.
Yeah, she's like, I took a shower by myself. She's like, I ate whatever the fuck I wanted. And she's like, and I just couldn't stop eating. Like, and she goes, and then when she got off tour, her mom's like, oh, happened to you? You're fat.
It's out of control. And she's like, I'm sorry.
The funny thing is that the mom, so Jeanette says, my mom looked so sickly and awful, and I hated seeing her like this. Like, I just felt so bad. Like, I know, I was like, oh my God, what happened to my mom? Like, she was always so beautiful and like, blah, blah, blah. And her mom goes, Jeanette, what happened? Because she probably put on like 5 pounds or something like that. And it's so funny because I'm like, that woman did not deserve how beautiful of a daughter you were to her, because you were like, oh, this is my mom. She's such a titan. She's such a big, you know, powerful, giant woman. And, you know, to her, like, this is woman fucking set the moon. And she's like, oh, Jeanette, 5 pounds, really? Like, oh, I would have punched her in the face. I'm like, shut up. I'm like, you have cancer.
I'm going to roll you down this hill, lady. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, you're going to have to be in a wheelchair one of these days. And I think I'd be very nice to me, because I'm going to be the one that's taking care of you, because this is what you designed. This is by your design.
Fuck alone.
But the funny thing is that I love how the mom actually was correct about this. She said, let's go with Capitol Records, because whomever the other one was, Big Machine, was going to be busy with that girl Taylor.
Which is,
and I was like, yeah, they are going to be busy.
Yeah.
And they were busy with her. So that's that. She probably had the best outcome on that tour with Capitol Records.
I think probably the right decision.
It was the right move. If you want to stick out, because, like, I mean, Jeanette McCurdy, think about Jeanette McCurdy and Taylor Swift. They both look the same. They don't, but their silhouette is the same. Long hair, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, long blonde hair. You know, I guess Jeanette's not very tall, but they have a similar silhouette.
Tiny.
Yeah, she's a tiny girl. Thing. But anyway, so then we have 2013 to 2015. It's the spinoff show. Oh, so Dan Schneider. Dan Schneider is never referred to as Dan Schneider. Dan Schneider is always referred to as the creator.
The creator.
And that might be the only time that she has any intonation that she like hates something. Like, she's like, the creator. Like, she fucking, like, whenever she talks about him, like, she was a little stank on that.
She doesn't have anything nice to say about him. She's basically like, even when he's being nice to you, like, you can't enjoy it because you know it's fucking loaded. Like, I've seen him scream and at a six-year-old and fire them on the spot. Yeah. Like, absolutely.
She's
not.
Like, there's only two modes with him. It's like all loving, all nice, all whatever. It's all benevolence or it's all malignance. Like,
there's no in the middle.
There's no in the middle. But the funny thing is, Chrissy, is that, I mean, she does have some stank on her voice when she talks about him. But I would say she's still way nicer than
he deserves. Than
he deserves. Like, she could have. And I think also it's because I think she accepted some, like, hush money type. No, she
I don't
didn't
think
accept
she did.
It. No, she didn't accept that. But I think that she kind of. Hush money in like
honestly,
quotes.
I think he lucked out, because I think in terms of like the pile of her trauma, she's like, this guy is the fucking least of my worries. Okay, like,
yeah. She said that being around the creator and gave her the same types of feelings as being around her mom. Like, she always had to monitor their moods, always had to make sure that they were looked after and they were okay and all that stuff. So like, that's just like. That's when you have to be careful for people, is that if somebody always is like making sure that you're okay and they're your kid, that's fucked. That you're like, oh, no. Don't be worried about me. I need to be worried about you. You know what I mean? Like, God. Don't, if the kid is acting like that, they're so worried. Like, just ask them if they're okay. Give them a hug. Tell them that they're loved and tell me about a feeling of yours. Do you love Chef Boyardee? Like, I need to make sure that you have your own feelings about things. So she's on this. So she gets called to a lunch with Dan Schneider because there's like a lunch with her mom and Dan Schneider. And there's only lunches like this if you're getting a spinoff.
It's either really good or really bad. If you're going to with anything, she talks about it. She's like, if you're going to lunch or you're having all of your management on a call with you, it's either really good or really bad. There's no in between.
No in between ever. So she gets this spinoff where it's Sam and Kat, and it's McCurdy.
Well, it was supposed to be just her. So they had told her that it was just her, and then it turned into this whole Sam and Kat thing with like Ariana Grande.
And they really fucked her over a lot of times because they told her that she could direct an episode, and then somebody said that they really didn't want her to do that. And I was like, "Who?"
By the way, that producer coming in, I would have thrown a fucking rock at that person's head where she came in.
Oh, so like, totally.
She was supposed to. Jeanette was supposed
to
direct.
Hey, don't want you to be mad at me.
And they didn't fucking tell her. So when she got the sides, which is like the script, her name it was just says like TBA or
NA
whatever NA for director.
It's a director NA.
So they had pulled her off to director, which they had promised her this entire time, and then she like has a panic attack, and she's in her dressing room, and she lets the producer in, and the producer is like, I just wanted to let you know that someone on set said they'd quit if you directed. It wasn't me. I was pulling for you. Bye. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. They said, if this is about the director thing, it's like, no. The panic attack is actually because my mom's dying and I don't have a good grip on my life right now, or my mom just died or something like that. And I don't have a good grip on my life.
That everything in my life has fucked me over and you guys are now part of that. So please get out.
Yeah, it's not about you guys right now. It's about everything. And now you coming in and saying, if this is about this thing, it's like, actually, it's not. But thank you for bringing it up, because now I'm going to read you the riot act. Like, I would have been like, I would have just gone scorched earth on somebody just because I've got a lot going on right now. But anyway, so this Sam and Kat show, it's with Ariana Grande. And fuck that, dude.
Oh, God.
She
was like used as like a fucking bounce house for the set children. She had to be a good sport about everything. Oh, you're being a good sport. She's like, no.
You're such a good sport.
Thanks so much
for being a good sport.
I hate sports. I'm not being good at anything.
I'm
Fuck
actually
you.
The worst
I have
sport.
To do all of this. I have to be a good sport and everything while Ariana is off doing whatever the fuck she wants to advance her career, and I'm acting with a box.
Hanging out with Tom Hanks.
No. No,
yeah, I have to sit here and fucking pick up the slack and do all the work. And all I get is thanks for being a good sport. I'm not even getting a fucking director credit on an episode now.
No.
Like, fuck you guys. So she was really fucking pissed off about that whole thing. And then also like Dan Schneider, like, and I mean, this is what people do. I mean, she was like 18 and he's like, oh, have you ever wanted to try alcohol? And she's like, not really.
Everyone on Victorious gets drunk all the time.
Yeah. And he's like, you guys are all fucking like such squares and like blah, blah, blah. And she's like, all right, whatever. Like, I'll drink your fucking alcohol. And she was, it was gross. But like, and she said that. He's like, you don't like it? She goes, no. Like, so that's what I like about her, is at least she has some earnestness. Like, she's like, I told you I wasn't going to like it. I tried it. I don't like it. Leave me the fuck alone. Like,
stop calling here.
Yeah, I appreciate that about her a lot, is that she's just like, okay, fine. I'll try your stupid coffee and whiskey. Oh, shocker. I don't like it. Thought that I wouldn't.
God.
So there's that type of thing. And then so she's kind of pissed off about her that no director thing. And then it actually turns out that she gets a call from her agents and her managers, and they're like, so Sam and Kat got canceled because the producer of the show is being investigated for sexual harassment or something like that on the show. And she's like, oh, fucking awesome.
Like,
she was
great.
So excited.
Thanks for
she
the
was
good
so
news.
Excited. Yeah, and they were like, oh.
Okay.
Okay. Like, her reaction, she was like, great. Love that.
What else
love
you guys
that
got?
That's canceled. Yeah.
And they're like, they want to give you $300,000. And she's like,
yeah.
Okay, why? Tell me more. Oh, yeah. Well, it's so you never speak publicly about your experience with Disney and Dan Schneider. And she's like, no.
Yeah, she goes, that sounds like hush money. And that's another thing that I respect the fuck out of her is that, like, she said that she heard $300,000 and she's like, oh, that seems too good to be true. And she goes, why? Like, so I like that yeah, she asked.
Why?
That was a really good question. Like, why? Like, why am I getting that?
She's like,
and
no,
they're
no.
like, oh, so I've you been, don't talk about this.
I've been fucked over at every turn. This $300,000 is coming saddled with shit. Like, I'm
that's
no
blood
way.
Money. Yeah, that's blood money. No, thank you. And so then she decides that she wants to retire from acting. And her agents kind of drop her there, which, I mean, I get it. Like,
oh,
they're
well,
like, well, you're not going to do anything.
That's after the Netflix thing. So she,
oh,
she
that's right.
stops
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Salmon Cat thing, and that's fine. And then she ends up taking a Netflix show that it's not actually a Netflix show. It's a show that's distributed by Netflix, but it's a show that's like, I don't know. It's
produced by some Canadian company
some Canadian
or something
company
like
or
that. Yeah.
So when your whole team is on a call with you, it's either really good news or really bad news. And they all get on a call with her and they're like, we just want to let you know. And they're expecting her to like break down and cry and be like, you know, the Liz Taylor actress, you know, tears.
Yeah.
Like, we just want to let you know that the show has been canceled. And this is bad news. And she's like, good news. I could give
yeah,
a fuck.
Great news.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I genuinely
awesome.
Don't give a fuck at all. Also, I'm going to take a break from acting probably for all of time. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.
And she, like, she says, like, that it's great news that it got canceled and that she's, like, she's almost relieved because she wanted to figure out a way to get out of it. But the only reason why she was doing it was to please her mom. But then her mom is dead now. So she's like, well, wait, do I have
well,
to do
wait,
this?
I am
yeah.
off the hook.
Yeah, so she's like, oh, fuck this. I don't have to do this anymore. I'm just going to quit. I'm going to retire from acting for a while. And they were like, oh, okay. So she got this, because the Netflix thing, like, just bombed. It didn't do that great. But, like, she did meet, like, so she's had some relationships with people. It's funny because it's not like her mom prevented her from, like, oh, you shouldn't do the, like, you shouldn't hang out with him or anything
yeah,
like that. She
wanted,
just called her, like, a slut.
She wanted to, like, be present. No, she had a lie.
Yeah,
she
did lie.
She had to tell.
She said Colton was in Hawaii with her.
Yeah.
But she knew about, like, she knew about these boyfriends. It's just, like, Jeanette just didn't talk about it with her. But, like, she obviously knew about him.
There was, and everyone is, like, some sort of abuse with her. So,
yes,
like, the
absolutely.
First boyfriend that she was with was that Joe guy that she calls Joe. And the Joe guy, she's 18, he's 31. And
he broke up with his girlfriend to be with her.
To be with her. And then he like picks her up. He's like fucking wasted. And you're like in a room or whatever. And he's like, I want to have sex. And she's like, I'm not really ready. And he's like, we are not fulfilling my sexual needs. So I need you to blow me. And she's like,
oh no. He said that he broke up with his girlfriend. He's like, I threw away 5 years of my life and to be with you and like whatever. And she was like, okay. And she's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, we're not even like having sex. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, can you at least give me a blowjob? Like, it was like, can you, like, I'm like, this is a child.
Yeah. I love that she got to a point where she's just finally looking at him and just got the ick. Like, it was just like,
oh, yeah.
Nope. No, I don't even like you. I don't love you. I don't like you. I'm going to need to get you to get out of my house. Why don't you?
Yeah, get out.
Get your
I don't
shit.
Like the way, I don't like the stuff that you talk about. I don't like anything.
Get back
about
in your busted
you
car and jalopy on down the road. I've had enough,
yeah.
had enough of you.
It's been real and it's been fun, but it ain't been real fun. So
no.
Anyway, I'll see you later, Joe. But like, she is like that with everybody. And it's so funny because it seems like she can just look at somebody and just say their name and then they know. That like she's
yeah,
like
the,
it's almost like if you heard your name like Steven and then you're like fuck
it is Steven that so that the very end of the book
Steven was
she's,
wild
she's dating a guy named Steven who I think she met on this on
the
filming
Netflix show.
Of the Netflix
yeah.
show and he's the one that he comes back and he's like you need to get help for your bulimia
yes.
or I'm breaking up with you and she's like I'm gonna go see a therapist and she goes and sees a therapist and then she breaks up with which by the way the therapist I was like lady you need to like I mean, review your process because I didn't like their process either. I totally saw why Jeanette was like, I'm done with this. I'm not here
anymore.
Done
with you.
you are triggering me in ways that I don't want to be triggered, and I'm not ready to be at that part of this journey, and you are whatever. Beyond that. So she's like, I'm seeing him today. I need to tell Steven that I have broke up with therapy. I'm not fucking doing it anymore. He's gonna break up with me. And he comes in and she's like, I quit therapy. And he's like, Oh my God, I don't care. Because I found Jesus, and as long as you have Jesus, you don't need therapy. And I am Jesus. And she's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, okay. She's like, but this is kind of like huge. And okay. He's like, yeah, but like, I have something pretty big.
Big news too. It's pretty big. You're not going to imagine how big it is. I'm kind of imagine the biggest celebrity in history. Imagine huge.
So, you know, like, you're famous and, like, people recognize you and they're like, hey, you know, like, whatever. Bigger.
You think bigger, think higher. Think, like, lift it up. Think raised from the dead. Think all of it.
Think Lord and Savior.
That's me. It's me, Jesus Christ.
He watched the some Netflix show or whatever, and he was like...
I don't know what he watched.
It was some Netflix show, and he's like... I'm Jesus. And then she was like, do you want me to call like your family so you can like,
yeah, I'm
like
gonna,
maybe you need to be somewhere.
I'm gonna call 911. Do you have any friends or
next of kin that I can contact? She goes, this is crazy. And the family ends up calling her and says like, okay, we're with him. He's in an institution. Like, we checked him out. Like, you know, they believe he's schizophrenic. And
all I can think of in all of this shit is the clip of Trixie Mattel when she's like, okay, God's not real, and I am, so
yes.
Do with that what you will.
And Jeanette McCurdy, she says, like, because the guy is talking to her about how he's Jesus, and she's like, but hold on, like, we've had discussions about this.
Yeah, you're not.
But, like, you don't believe in that. And he's like...
I do.
And I like how she framed that. Like, she's like, we've talked about this, you don't believe in that. And he's like, no, because I believe this, and like, blah, blah, blah. She's like, okay, no.
He also dropped the, I'm Jesus, right on her as she was like an hour away from boarding a plane to go to Australia to do press for that Netflix show.
Yes, and she's like, okay.
I think this is like legitimately the worst day of her life because, one, this was right as her dad... her Mark dad was like, I'm fucking Karen, your mom's arch nemesis that stole her baby name, and also I'm not your actual dad. And she's going to tell her boyfriend, and he's like, I have bigger news, I'm Jesus. And she's like, for fuck's sake. And then she boards a plane and has
the flight attendant's like, everything okay? Yeah, great.
No, yeah, everything's wonderful. She has a very, very bad flight in terms of how her stress and anxiety is triggered, and has a bad day with her eating disorder, and loses a molar in the toilet of the fucking airplane, and then lands and gets in an Uber, and she's sitting in the back of the Uber, and the guy's like, oh, I'm gonna turn this song up, I love it, and it's fucking Ariana Grande, and she's like, you know what, why don't you just drive me off a cliff? Why don't you just... We're in Australia. Why don't you just leave me in the outback and let your fucking snakes and spiders eat me? Like, I can't. I'll get eaten by wombat, mongoose, python, whatever
you
got out there.
Can you set me up to fight with a kangaroo?
What do you guys have?
Because I could really use a fucking kick to my fucking skull right now.
I've read.
God.
You guys got a lot of shit that will kill you. Why don't you introduce me to, like, you know, four of them? I'm just saying.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing me to the land down under. I wish that I could go underneath the ground and just bury myself.
I have reached rock bottom in down under. So thank you. If you can just show me the gates to hell, I'll walk myself in. You don't
just
drop me off.
Is it at the Marriott that we're going to?
Drop me off at the gates. I will take it from there. Thank you.
But the funny thing is like her dry sense of humor. The show, the song is called Focus on Me. And she's like, maybe Ariana's right. I do need to focus on me right now. And I'm like, that's pretty funny. Like, that's objectively hilarious. Like, she's just like, yeah, all right, maybe I should focus on me right now. But she does. She kind of focuses on herself. There was one star review that I read where it's like, she doesn't even spend that much time on her recovery. Because she's living it right now. She just started. She's like fucking 31 years old, and she just figured out like that she.
Yeah, if you think this poor woman is going to detangle 20 years of compound immense trauma in a fucking 4-year, you are wrong. You are dead wrong.
Super wrong. And I also love how, so she bought a house because she thought that it was something that she should do. So she bought a house and she's living in it. And like, it's constantly under construction. It's always fucking, it's always a mess and all this stuff. So she decides, her therapist tells her, and I will say this is good about her therapist. They're like, so why do you live there? And she's like, I don't know, because it's like you should have it.
That's like an investment or whatever.
And they're like, yeah, but it doesn't make you happy and it brings you stress. And she's like, yeah, but like.
Like, nothing makes me happy. I don't know what you're going to tell me. What do I do?
So she decides she's going to sell the house, and then she tells her grandparents about this, and her grandma is like, oh, you don't have any money. My granddaughter doesn't have any money. She's
I'm
like,
telling
whatever.
All of my friends you're a poor. She's
and then like, her grandma bitch. Calls her a bitch.
What?
I was like, excuse me? Like, I would never let my grandma speak to me like that. I beg pardon?
Yeah, I'm sorry, lady. I'm gonna stop you right there. I realized I blocked you on the cell phone. I'm gonna go ahead and block you in real life as well. So if you would just get the fuck out of my house right now.
Yeah. By the way, Grandma. So I'm moving, and you'll never know the address, and you're not invited.
Yeah, I'll see you later. But I won't.
I'm gonna have a lot of parties, a lot of ragers. Anyway. My favorite line in this whole book was I loved at the beginning when she's talking about this Christmas present that she got, and it's like a Rugrats pajamas, and it's got Angelica, her least favorite character, and it has daisies. I hate flowers on clothing. And the line where she says, if there is one thing that I can pinpoint that is in direct opposition to my soul, it's ruffles. Because it was ruffles around the wrists and the ankles on the pants, and I was like, ooh, I've never related to something more. So she is a couple of years younger than me. So she's kind of in the same the same references. I don't even think I really watched Rugrats, but I do remember that I do know like the theme song and stuff, and that Orange Tape. I obviously know about the Orange Tape, Rugrats in Paris.
We all know that one.
Yeah. Such a weird time. All the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movies as well. Like, I remember those VHS tapes very vividly.
I just know the looks of them.
Yes, I just know the looks of the VHS tapes.
Brother for Sale.
And Free Willy. I know Free Willy. I know that box, the back of my hand. I love that box. Hold me like the River Jordan.
I love them all so much.
Oh, Sarayoki is back.
Welcome. Welcome back after a long hiatus. We have returned.
We're officially back, baby. Sarayoki is back.
Yeah. We did it.
We motherfucking did it. But anyway, so Chrissy, would you recommend this book for people?
Yes. You know what? I don't know. I think honestly,
if you have the mental capacity
if you have the mental capacity to take the information that this woman gives, and I do think that this was like a cathartic thing for her to do as part of her healing process, was to write this and to share her story, because maybe it could help somebody at some point. And it could, because she is very open about her being her very very challenging upbringing, being raised by a narcissistic parent, her struggles with addiction for alcohol, her struggles with an eating disorder. She's pretty open about all that stuff. So if you're not at a point to be able to absorb that information, I think you should wait. But if you want to hear that and you think it would be something that's great for you, I would read it. I think I wish her the fucking best in the world. And I hope she wins at every single thing she does. And she's a good sport for herself and nobody else.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think if you can listen to this book and think and before you press play, say this has nothing to do with me. This is just a woman telling me her story. This is a good book for you to listen to. If you're going to take it personally or say like, oh, I went through worse or something like that, like we've all been through some shit. Just listen to this person's story. And I think it's very interesting. And it's also like we all process things and handle things differently. So just because something like that happened to you and you're like, well, I didn't do that. It's like, well, yeah, because you're not me or I'm not you. Like, duh. I don't care. Like, great. Good for you. I don't give a fuck. But anyway, so I think that this was a good book. So I would also recommend it. Again, I would say probably be in a good headspace. The Quiet on Set documentary had just come out, and it was very interesting, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed learning all the information. I did not enjoy the content of it. I enjoyed, like, that my eyes were illuminated to some things. And then my grandpa died. Chrissy had a bunch of work trips that she had to go on. I was in the middle of a rewatch on Mad Men where Grandpa Gene died. So then that was happening. And then also, like, then this book, I was trying to get through it, and I was just like, good God. Like,
it's just like, I'm also in the headspace. It was just fucking terrible. I'm also like in the headspace where I can't take on anything new. So, like, yeah. I mean, all I watch right now, all I had been watching is RuPaul's Drag Race.
Of course.
And there's a British game show. I don't know. It's a I don't know if it's a panel show or a game show. I don't know what you would qualify it as. Called Taskmaster, that's on YouTube. I don't know if you know what it is. It's hosted by very famous comedians in the UK and probably everywhere else except for fucking here. Greg Davies and Alex Horn. Alex Horn created it. Whatever. There's like 17 seasons. It's all I can watch. I just watch it over and over and over again. It's basically, it's like a panel of comedians, and they give the comedians the shittiest, weirdest tasks to do, and then they did all the tasks, and then they, like, basically grade them. They, like, give them points.
Awesome.
And it's the only thing that gets me through life right now. So thanks, Davies and Alex Horn. I appreciate
thing that
it.
The only thing that is getting me through right now is I watch Kenny versus Spenny on YouTube. And then I also watch I've just been – okay. Okay. This is a judgment-free zone.
I would never
I
judge
love
you. Ever.
The People versus O.J. Simpson. That is my favorite biopic series ever.
Watch
it. It is so well done. Love it. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Oh, okay. Somehow, for whatever reason. Okay, so Sarah Paulson is Marsha Clark. Okay?
Yeah,
I've
seen the hair.
Great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The hair in that show is way better than what it is in real life. Okay. Cuba Gooding Jr. is O.J. Simpson. What? John Travolta's performance is beautiful. I love David Schwimmer as Robert Kardashian. It's fucking hilarious. Selma Blair is Kris Jenner. She's iconic. It's just a beautiful show. Everybody should watch it. It's truly gripping. And then you should watch. So here's what happens. I get in the mood to watch The People versus O.J. Simpson. So then I watch that, and then I watch it again. And then I watch O.J. Made in America, the docuseries on, I think it's on Netflix right now. And then what will happen is I will pull up the O.J. Simpson trial, all 494 videos of them on YouTube, the pre-trial and everything, and I watch that. So right now, that's what I'm doing.
As you're obsessing over the O.J. Simpson trial, I'm just watching British comedians take on Taskmaster.
Correct.
Got it. And we just watch that in tonnage because we don't have the capacity to do anything else.
I was just about to say, we're fucking crushing it, though. So here's what I know. I know that the man who was walking the dog, that he found the Akita that was at Bundy. I know that he likes to make sure that he gets home in time to watch the Dick Van Dyke show. He walks the dog after Dick Van Dyke, and then he makes sure he gets home before Mary Tyler Moore. So I've got fucking problems, and I've got solutions because I can watch all of the YouTube videos.
How do you feel about Kato Kaelin?
I think that he is hilarious. I think that he is accidentally hilarious.
I also think he is unintentionally just iconic.
So he says he's talking about eating McDonald's, like, during the pretrial. And he says that he eats some of the French fries, but he doesn't eat the main course. Because he's trying to be professional and, like, I'm answering these questions. And he's like, well, I didn't eat the main course. I was like, you mean the burger? Like, Kato, what are you talking about?
It was absolutely a fucking happy meal. Like, I'm sorry, Kato, you didn't eat your 4-piece nuggets and get your toy. Like, you're okay.
He's like, damn it, OJ, no Hot Wheels. I said I wanted Hot Wheels. fuck. And then he's all mad. Like, and I mean, you know that the like during that time too, 1994, like those toys were amazing.
Oh man, those toys were the toys.
Yes. God. Like those Barbies. Oh, I would have, I could kill. I ordered some on Etsy because somebody was selling them for like $4. And I was like, these are a treasure to me. I'm like, see, so this was, is worth $4.
That was also a docuseries that I really enjoyed was the McMillions, the people that.
I love that one.
That robbed the McDonald's Monopoly game blind. That I was like, you know what? More power to you guys. Let's do it. If you wouldn't,
yes.
If you wouldn't use the U.S. mail to claim all of your shit and you would have just FedExed it, you wouldn't have been charged because your only charge were mail fraud. So
yeah, I fucking love that McMillions docuseries. That one's so good. And then also the accompanying podcast. I just like to know everything about everything when I learn about things. So
I love that one batshit FBI guy, Doug, who showed up to the McDonald's
meeting in
a gold foil suit. Like him.
Love.
Hope he's well, too. Wish you
hope
well,
he's
Doug.
Doing great. Doug, love you so much. I hope that you're having the best day. So I think
would you recommend this book, by the way? Did we already?
Yeah, I talked about that. I was going to say that there was a listener, Chrissy, that messaged me on Instagram
yes.
and said that she was fart cursing people while she was
aww.
Running. So I was really proud of you for that. Thank you so much for fart cursing people while
who are
exercising.
We fart cursing? Let's fart curse someone.
I'm fart cursing the fuck out of Deb.
You know, she's dead. I'm not going to waste on her. I'm going to fart curse Ariana Grande. That
ooh,
and Dan
that's
Schneider.
That's a good one.
I fart curse you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to fart curse Ariana Grande, but I'm going to posthumously fart curse Deb though. I'm going to put some stank on it. I'm going to stomp my foot.
You're going to fart curse her grave. Go right ahead. I'm just going to I'm going to go get it.
So tell us who you have fart cursed for this week. Maybe it's us. We don't know. But
fart
tell
curse,
us that
fart curse early, fart curse often. That's my new motto. Okay, you every morning you just get out there and fart curse the world. Do it. I believe
fart
in you.
Curse the world. That might be our first shirt.
Fart curse the world.
Oh my God. wake up in the morning and you're like.
Curse you.
Who are we fart cursing today? And why is it Deb?
It.
It's whomever we deserve. So I think we're going to have to definitely do a palate cleanser book. I think that I was thinking that we'll probably do another Goosebumps book or Chrissy, maybe we can read a Babysitter's Club book. Maybe. I don't know yet. I'm trying to decide here. But anyway, so we're definitely going to need a palate cleanser book after this one. We will be back in 2 weeks.
We will.
I'm sorry
and
about
then
the.
We will get to RuPaul's memoir.
Yes.
And
yes. I just have a feeling that one's also going to be harrowing, and I can't handle that right now.
I love RuPaul.
I just cannot take any more devastation in my heart right now.
I know, but the great thing about RuPaul is that you know that
there's always a win
in the present space.
Oh, winner.
RuPaul
I heard Trixie
has fucking won. Okay,
I heard Trixie Mattel talk on Caleb Heron's podcast where she said that Trixie said that RuPaul is like, you know, he will come out and he'll do his thing and then he'll go and then come back and be just as big like every time that he comes back. So I think that's amazing.
Did you watch Drag Race this season?
No, not yet. I got to catch up on everything.
Oh my
I got to catch up.
I lived for this. They were the fucking best. And I am still not over. They did like a drag race challenge. I will never, ever, ever get over this for as long as I fucking live. And RuPaul loved it too. There's a queen on this season who I personally, people love her, hate her, love to hate her. I grew very fond of her. Her name is Plain Jane. She is wonderful.
Yes.
They had a drag race challenge where they had to like make over a dancer into like their sister, and she made over the dancer. And RuPaul's like, "What's your name?" And Plain Jane's like, "I named her Lazy Susan." And I'm like, "I will never get over this for as long as I live." And
I love that so much. That is amazing. No, I got to get caught up on Drag Race. The opposite of fart curse to Katya. Katerina Petrovna Zamilochikova. Hope she's doing well. The opposite of a fart curse to Jeanette McCurdy. A fart curse on Deb McCurdy. And the a fart curse on Ariana Grande.
The opposite of a fart curse to all of you. To you.
Yes.
To you.
The opposite of a fart curse to all of you.
I wish you give and never receive every fart curse in your presence.
May you be the sluttiest fart glass. A slutty fart blaster. May we know them. May we be them, and may we raise them.
The toast.
Is that a Ray Dunn thing on?
I saw that. I saw it on a T-shirt.
Did you see it at TJ Maxx?
Yeah, I bought it at Home Goods.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us, and cheerfully yours.
Cheerfully
opposite
yours.
Of a fart blast. Hope that you're the sluttiest one. Goodbye.
We love you. Goodbye.